This is Joanna Schrader reporting, and I am with Don Nelson with the Renewable Energy Group, also known as REG. Don, how are you?
Well, just fine. Thank you, Joanna. How are you doing today?
I'm well. So many people may not know, but REG is you're probably the largest biodiesel producer in the country. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have over 180 million gallons worth of production in place today.
And you also have some plants that are under construction or getting ready to come online. Is that also correct?
Yes, we have a facility down in New Orleans, which is under construction in Poirier, Kansas. And we're bringing, hopefully, online the last train at Seneca in the next few months.
Great. So we are going to talk today about RINs, Renewable Identification Numbers. And many people do not know what these are. So I want to first, they're very important to the biodiesel industry. So can we start off by talking about what are RINs?
Yes, and this is always a very complicated subject because we have various RINs available in the marketplace. But the Renewable Fuel Standard 2, RFS2, has four buckets that involve the counting of RINs. And to make it simple, RINs really is the currency of RFS2. That's how the EPA measures the compliance of an obligated party. And we have different decodes, which are rather complicated, but we have cellulosic, biomass-based diesel, advanced biofuels, and renewable fuel RINs. So those are the four buckets. And, of course, biodiesel falls into the biomass-based diesel bucket, or what they now call a decode 4 RIN. And with every gallon that we produce and sell, 1.5 RINs, renewable identification numbers, travel with that gallon to the blender, and the blender then separates it to the blender or obligated party, separates that RIN from the gallon.
So you could ultimately have more RINs in the marketplace than you do actually have what gallons of fuel?
Well, yes, because of the factor in the biomass-based diesel, 1 gallon gets 1.5 RINs. And it's a measurement that has been defined by the EPA under RFS2. And those RINs will accompany the gallons. So if you take the RINs out there in the marketplace and divide it by 1.5, that should be the number of gallons that are out there in the marketplace.
But not always.
Well, it should be.
Okay.
It should be, yes. And there were some issues in 2010 where there was possibly some invalid RINs. So those are being looked at. But every gallon produces a RIN and a half as far as biomass-based diesel.
So what happened in 2010? The obligated parties sued the EPA, claiming that they couldn't meet their the mandate that the EPA set under RFS2. The EPA upheld, the EPA's mandate was upheld.
Yeah.
Were there enough RINs in the marketplace to, in fact, meet the RFS2 last year?
Well, as we looked at 2009 and 10, they were combined, and we had 1.15 billion gallons of material that needed to be utilized or consumed during that period of time. As we looked at the reporting to EPA in February of 2010, and then extrapolated those numbers through what we've now consumed through 2010, that's going to be reported in February 2011, from the USDA FAS import-export numbers, from the U.S. Census Bureau numbers, it appears that we're going to be short about 95 million gallons against the biomass-based diesel. And that's in the very high level. Each company reports their own obligation. So company A may be in compliance where company B is short. So from a 35,000 foot level, we appear to be about 95 million gallons short of that obligation.
So let's talk about why. Why were we short, give or take, in 2009 and 2010?
Well, there's probably a combination of reasons, but, I think with the blender's tax credit issue caused some uncertainty in the marketplace. With the lawsuit, the NPRA API lawsuit against EPA caused some uncertainty. And the obligated parties with the uncertainty out there of what really was happening, the investment in infrastructure, blending infrastructure, really hadn't taken place. And so they relied on, you know, large blenders out there to buy RINs, and they're just, throughout the year, there wasn't enough demand to produce, sell, transfer, and have the RINs available to the marketplace. So that material, that 95 million gallons that were short in 10, are going to have to be rolled over into 11.
Okay, so let's talk about 2011. So we're in 2011. We had a significant amount of biodiesel plants that went out of production or were underproducing in 2010. We've had some foul weather here in 2011, which has kept, unfortunately, some of these biodiesel facilities still under production. So it appears we're a little under where you could be.
Yep.
The industry has this phenomenal capability of production, and you're not there. How are we looking for 2011?
It's a great question, Joanna. Under the RFS2, plants had to re-register this last year. And 2.2 billion gallons of nameplate capacity production went through the engineering evaluation and registration process with the EPA. So you could say that there's 2.2 billion gallons worth of production available to the marketplace. We all know that a number of those plants didn't operate. We produced somewhere in the neighborhood of 310 million gallons in 2010. On a side note, we took a look at, you know, ourselves and other people, our competition who were running at reduced rates. And we took a look at those plants also that we knew were getting ready to start up within the next 30 to 60 days. And we factored in kind of some numbers that we thought were reasonable, maybe a little conservative, but we feel that the plants that have been running or plants that are starting up, it appears that we could be up to 800 million gallons a year almost immediately with those plants. And we didn't include some of the plants that hadn't run all year. I mean, this is just a portion of the plants that are registered. So, you know, we feel very, very confident that we, once the demand appears and once, you know, the obligated parties begin to buy and blenders see the great blend economics that are out there today, that we can get production ramped up rather quickly to that level. And as you know, there are some plants out there that are going to require hiring people. There's going to be plants that are going to be needing more working capital. And that's going to be a little bit longer startup. But we feel very confident that we can meet and exceed the obligation that's in front of the industry this year.
So to reiterate, you feel that you not only can meet 2011 requirements, but you'll be able to make up for the shortfall of 2009-2010 as well.
That's exactly correct.
And then moving on to 2012 and beyond, you'll be ready to meet those demands as well.
Yes, and I think even 2012, I know it sounds a little funny, I think that as infrastructure gets built out in 2011, that might even be easier in 2012 because the obligated parties are currently, and that's one thing I must say, at this meeting I'm extremely pleased to hear that many of these obligated parties have plans and are moving forward with different opportunities or infrastructure within the United States to execute their obligation. And this has been a very good meeting in regards to hearing that news.
So does the part of their plans and executing their obligation include helping the industry build out the needed infrastructure to make sure the fuel gets where it needs to be?
Yes, and I think it comes from a lot of different perspectives. I think that what you're going to see is some blenders in some areas are going to be able to come online because the blend economics are right. I'm extremely pleased to see Colonial and Plantation pipelines and other pipelines, the Magellans and Eddies. I don't want to leave anybody out, but I'm extremely pleased that they're looking at pipeline alternatives because that's infrastructure that can be used over a wide range of obligated parties. We're also seeing obligated parties look at where they can insert blending operations. In California and the Pacific Northwest and in the Houston area and the Southeast and the Northeast in the big consuming, you know, the diesel consuming areas. And so, you know, these are all in the works at some level with many of the different obligated parties. and I think that they are making a great effort at this point. We wish, industry-wise, we wish they didn't last year.
Right.
But they are, we're very pleased to hear from a lot of them during this meeting that those plans are coming together.
So, Don, let me ask you this. You know, you've had a series of one-year tax credit extensions, and then you lost the tax credit for a year, and then it came back for 1 year with a retroactive for a year. There's a lot of talk that what happens if it goes away again, and infrastructure's king. I mean, we need to open up market access for biodiesel. So from REG's perspective, what do you need to make sure that you can open up market access so that you can compete when that time comes that you need to compete without the subsidy?
You know, the blender's tax credit has been a tremendous help to help develop this industry. And without it, I don't think we'd be where we are today. As we move forward, I know there's a lot of discussion back in Washington on whether it's going to get extended for both ethanol and biodiesel. And I think that it will help in continuing to grow this industry. I think when you talk about ethanol or cellulosic or advanced biofuels, these are new and developing technologies. Monies are extremely important to help move that forward to the next generation. I know that we at REG are looking at a lot of different technologies out there and different feedstocks, and the help in the frame of a tax credit is extremely valuable to us as an industry. I think as we get down the road, we're going to have to, you know, as an industry, become as efficient as possible. We as an industry, including the obligated party, need to look at all these different alternatives to us. Are we there yet? Probably not. Are we going to see a lot of changes? Yes. Yeah, tomorrow is always an exciting day. But I would say that NBB has done a tremendous job in lobbying for the biodiesel industry. I know that they're going to work very, very hard on an extension, either a producer's extension or a blender's extension. And awful hard to say what's going to happen in Washington. You know, Congress is one of those elements that I know very little about, and I really wouldn't want to kind of estimate what they're going to come
right
up with.
They can be fickle.
Yeah.
On a positive note, what do you know, for the readers of Domestic Fuel, who for the most part feel very passionate about energy and biodiesel, on a positive note, what do you want to leave them with in terms of what we're going to see in 2011?
Well, I think we're going to see a tremendous growth. As I stated before, we produced, the biodiesel industry in the United States produced about 310 million gallons last year. I'm estimating that to fulfill the obligation, we need to produce about 925 million. So that's a 300% increase. That's very exciting. You know, it's the industry, the investors in biodiesel and the industry in biodiesel tightened their belts in the last couple of years. We've weathered some really tremendously bad storms, and we're coming out the other side of it. And I can speak for myself, along with our other colleagues and friends and investors, that this is going to be a real, real exciting time. And I think that together with the obligated parties, we're going to see some tremendous growth over the next couple of years. And I think from a country standpoint, where we're using more renewable fuels, where we're becoming more independent, oil independent, even in a small way, it steps in the right direction. And I think we're going to see more work and with California under the low carbon fuel standard. I see, you know, Canada adopting, you know, they've got, you know, different blend mandates and directives in Canada, and we hope to see more in the near future. And so as far as North America, I think we've made some tremendous progress. And I think that we need to take a look at North America as really a unique spot in the world when it comes to this.
Great. Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Joanna.